Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Ben Jarosky Show is brought to you by the Chicago Federation of Labor, SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana, the Chicago Teachers Union, and of course, the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for all things there is to know the city of Chicago, and you can be a Benhead. ChicagoReader.com/Jarosky. It is Thursday, August 5th, and live from my apartment and his attic, this is the Ben Jarosky Show. Today on the program, the one, the only, Jimmy Dore. And now your host, yes, the one, the only. Never met a man like this person. Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarosky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarosky here. We're calling this What Would Harold Do Thursday? And here's why. Woke up this morning and saw this headline in my beloved bright one, Chicago Sun-Times, home delivered as always. I will now show it to the listeners. Realizing, of course, that there is no video of this show, so they can't see what I'm doing. So for all they know, I'm holding up a 1963 edition of Playboy. Thanks for lending that to me, D.
Oh, my God.
All right. Headline in the Chicago Sun-Times. No one rushed to the rescue. And then the subhead reads, Park District boss promised female lifeguard he would launch immediate investigation into her claims of abuse, harassment, and drug use by coworkers, then sat on report until another complaint 6 weeks later, sources say. Wow. The article inside by Fran Spielman and Lauren Fitzpatrick fleshes out the gruesome details of allegations of assault and intimidation and thuggery perpetrated by male lifeguards, Park District employees, I want to add, against their female colleagues. They've been drinking and smoking reefer, partying like rock stars. It's the latest in a series of exposés of lifeguards by the local media, most notably our dear friend Dan Mialopoulos over at WBEZ. A young Daniel was supposed to join us today, but at the very last minute, D, he got called away on an assignment and could not join us. How about that? But we'll get him on sooner enough. Dan, some breaking stories about abuses by lifeguards, not just in Chicago, but in Evanston, my beloved Evanston, my hometown, where I went to high school and studied algebra. The alleged abuse is the worst part of the stories that Dan has written and the Sun-Times has written. But the rest of the story is pretty bad, too. It's like both municipalities, Evanston and Chicago, are in full-blown cover-up mode, burying evidence, looking the other way, denying reporters' claims for more information, using the Freedom of Information Act process as a box to conceal the truth as opposed to a tool to reveal it. That's what they're doing. They got their lawyers, the Park District, concocting all kinds of excuses to keep Dan and the other reporters from getting at documents that would give them some sense of what happened. Some sense of what is the truth, some sense of who knew what and when and who did what kind of investigation there was, if any, or were they just sweeping it under the rug? When I read Dan's accounts, when I read the Sun-Times accounts, it's like we never learn in this city, or apparently in the suburbs. The suburbs never learn from Chicago's bad example. We're only what? Let me do the math. 6 years out from Laquan McDonald, and we're doing the same thing. Remember the Laquan McDonald situation? Jason Van Dyke, a police officer, shot Laquan McDonald 16 times. The official police version said that Van Dyke had no choice because Laquan McDonald was lurching at him with a knife in his hand. The city paid McDonald's family $5 million, clearly an attempt just to bury the case, make the story go away. This was the shooting happened in 2014. The municipal payout happened in 2015. And by the mayoral election, Rahm versus Chuy Garcia, it was non-existent. Rahm Emanuel was victorious. Turns out there was a tape of what happened. Reporters and activists filed a FOIA request to get at it. Rahm Emanuel's administration said, no way. It's part of an ongoing investigation. Can't reveal evidence. Blah, 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 blah. We get the lawyers to write up the documents, et cetera, and so forth. They took it to court. The activists did. And the judge rules that the city had to turn it over. And so we got to see the recording. We learned that the police version was wrong and that McDonald wasn't lunging toward Van Dyke. He was walking away and that there was no compelling reason to shoot him, much less 16 times. And then the only reason we learned this is because a judge made Mayor Rahm give up that tape. I was thinking about this the other night at the hideout. Judge Tim Evans was our guest. Judge Tim Evans, as you all know, is the Chief Justice of the Cook County Court. We recorded the event. You can hear it. Just go to listen to the podcast. Dennis dutifully dropped it last night. Thank you very much, Dr. D. But before Tim Evans was Judge Evans, he was Alderman Evans. He was Harold Washington's floor leader. Yes, the great Harold Washington back in the 1980s. Millennials, I know. You're sick of old timers talking about Harold Washington. I know. It's ancient history. After Harold Washington died in 1987, Tim Evans wanted to run for mayor. Eugene Sawyer wanted to run for mayor. Two black aldermen. There was a huge rivalry. There was a split in the black community. Sawyer got the nod. Evans did not. But the result of that division was a large reason why Richard M. Daley was elected mayor in 1989. This is basic Chicago history. And this, so that split in the black community, the division in the black community and the apathy and like nihilism and alienation from the political process that set in all throughout the 90s enabled Richard M. Daley, one of the reasons, enabled Richard M. Daley to sit in office for 21 years and then hand off the job to Rahm, who sat in office for another 8 years and probably would still be the mayor of the city of Chicago if that judge hadn't ordered Mayor Rahm to give up the videotape of Laquan McDonald's shooting. The whole world saw went down. One thing led to another, and Rahm decided not to run for earlier election. So I was listening there, having a conversation with Tim Evans at the hideout, talking about the ancient days when he and Sawyer had their split. And does he have any regrets about it? It's at the end of the tape. You can hear it for yourself. And while I was talking, I was wondering, what would the city be like if Harold Washington had not died? For instance, would Harold Washington have buried evidence of what went down with Laquan McDonald? Would he have concealed the tape? Would Harold Washington have forced the activist and reporter to go to court to get it? Or would he have released it right away, thus igniting charges against Van Dyke? Because how can you ignore that kind of evidence if you want to have a civilized society? There's many, many more instances. Would Harold Washington have sold the parking meters for a fraction of what they're worth? Would he have wasted all our money and efforts to try to bring the Olympics to town? Would he have closed all the schools and mental health clinics in poor black neighborhoods? Would he have spent all that TIF money in gentrifying neighborhoods instead of spending it where it's supposed to go in poor blighted neighborhoods? And to that list of things where you wonder what Harold would have done, add the scandal of the beach. Lifeguards sexually harassing coworkers and the park district officials looking the other way for 6 weeks. If you bury it, maybe it'll go away. That is so freaking Chicago. Would it have made any difference under Harold? I do not know. I like to think that the answer is no. But really, folks, ultimately, I do not know. So I urge the damn Eliopolises of the world to keep on pushing. Because one thing we've learned about public leaders in Chicago, you can't count on them to do the right thing, even when they know it's the right thing. We got a great show today, everybody. Yes, indeed. Jimmy Dore will be joining us. Did you reach out to him, D?
Yep, sent the email.
All right, sent the email a little early. Let's see if he's sent me a... Nope, hasn't sent me a list. Yeah, this has been quite a show, folks. I'm going to break the fourth wall. Hold on, I have to drink water before I do it. Smash that fourth wall. Thank you, D. We were supposed to have young Dan on the show with us, but he got called away at the last minute. I mean, literally at the last minute. We had already scheduled Jimmy Dore to be on at 1:30. So I was going to go from Dan to Jimmy Dore. And let me just say, I'm going to probably repeat this when Jimmy comes on, but I have to say, the suggestion that we have Jimmy Dore on the show came from Leonard Goodman, good friend of the show. Been a guest on the show many times. A radical lawyer, Blago's lawyer, reader-writer, who has far left views, even far further to the left than mine, D, if such a thing is possible.
Oh, what a hippie.
So he said, hey, would you like to have Jimmy Dore on your show? I said, hell yeah. I'd like to have Jimmy Dore on the show. I'm thinking Jimmy Dore's a really popular comic. Jimmy Dore's like a YouTube guy. Jimmy Dore's on the Joe Rogan show and Tucker Carlson show all the time. Maybe it'll boost our ratings. And instead of being some broke ass reader writer in my attic overlooking a porta potty, D, just imagine this. We'll have a palatial studio in Austin, Texas, just like Joe Rogan. This could be the start, D.
We'll be a broke ass podcast with just some more downloads. Who are we kidding?
Oh, I was thinking, me and Joe Rogan, and then we go out for coffee after. How's your show go today, Joe? Got a million hits on that one. Anyway, I got some requests from some dear friends of mine who said I shouldn't have Jimmy Dore on the show and told me that he goes so far to the left that he ends up going to the right. And that he's a danger to the progressive values or the liberal values or the lefty values that I believe in and I want to see take place in this country. The issue, the policies I wanted to see take place in this country. But I said, well, you know what? Let's bring him on anyway. Right, D? Come on. Let's hear what he has to say. Let's hear him defend himself. Let's hear him explain himself. What the hell?
Oh,
why not?
Doorbell. Here we go.
So without further ado, there he is. I can see him, folks.
Hey, Jimmy Dore. You hear me?
Yes. And you have sunglasses. Man, I got to get my sunglasses on. I'm going to put some sunglasses on.
No, he cannot Jimmy hear Dore. Us. He cannot hear us. That is the issue.
Jimmy Dore cannot hear us.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you.
I cannot hear you.
Okay. I'm going to wave
so
at
I
you.
Can't hear you. I wonder why I can't hear you.
I don't know.
What do I need to do?
I could tell you why you can't hear us, but then you can't hear me, so you can't hear the explanation.
Oh, my volume.
Oh, there we go. Are you there?
Hang on 1 second.
All good.
Yeah, you know, I must have a window open. Hold on.
All right, not a problem.
Right.
Well, you can't hear us, Dennis. Why don't you do your imitation of Jimmy Dore?
Okay, no,
you can't hear us.
No, hello. I got it.
Oh, all right. You can hear us?
All right. How's it going? Nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you, young man. Did you hear what I just said?
I did not. Tell me again.
I said that as long as he can't hear you, Dennis, that's the producer, why don't you do your imitation of Jimmy Dore?
I don't know. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
It's not that great. It's not that great. Big fan of the show. Jimmy Dore here. That's all it is. That's nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing amazing.
Suddenly he's modest, Jimmy. Okay. Oh, my God. He does you all the time. Anyway, Jimmy Dore.
Well, I haven't met anybody yet who does it. Can really, like, even like Mike McCray on the show. It doesn't really sound like me, so I would love if someone could do a spot on. But people do kind of like I've seen. There's a bunch of people that do like mocking ones that don't really sound like me. They just sound like me, dumb. But if someone could just really can nail, like Mike McCray nails impressions. I was really hoping he would nail it, but
damn it,
he just ends up sounding like this, like yeah. Talking like that. I'm like, I don't talk like that, Mike. That's not how I sound. Anyway, okay.
All right, here you are. Thank you for being here. And as I said before you came on, Leonard Goodman, a good friend of the show, urged me to bring you on as a guest. And he said, make sure you have him come on before he appears in Chicago, because the whole point of him coming on, he really wants to talk to you, is to plug his show in Chicago. So before we get down to the nitty gritty, why don't you do that? Yes, go ahead.
So we just added a second show. We sold out the first show. We're at the Thalia Hall this Saturday, which is August 7th. So it's at Thalia Hall, which is on the, it's in Pilsen over there area.
Yes.
And I used to live over there when I started comedy. I was at 19th and Jefferson. Anyway, so yeah, it's this Saturday. We're doing a live Jimmy Dore show. They're always a ton of fun. And so we just added a second show this week. And so I think there's a 9 o'clock show now, maybe. I think maybe 9 or 9:30. Anyway, so yeah, so go to jimmydorecomedy.com and get your tickets. Or go to thaliahall.com and get your tickets there. So, it's going to be a fun time. We're going to have a special guest. I don't want to say who it is, but we're going to have a special guest with us Saturday night. Last night, we did a show in Burbank, California, and our special guest was Jay Leno. Oh. So that was fun. And so I hope everybody's are into special surprise guests. And we're going to have another one on Saturday in Chicago. So, yeah. So thanks for letting me do that. I appreciate your help getting the word out. And it's going to be a blast.
My source tells me that the special guest is going to be Rahm Emanuel. Is there any truth to that rumor?
I cannot confirm nor deny who the special guests are. That's always going to be a big question.
All right, very good. Look at the ducking and dodging there. All right, Jimmy. So when I announced that you were going to be a guest on my show, I got some criticism from some dear friends of mine who said I shouldn't bring you on the show.
They're right. Yeah.
And I said, this was a shameless attempt by me to increase my ratings so I'm not stuck in my attic anymore. I hope that some of your listeners become regular listeners of my show. I'm being open about it, Jimmy. So before I get into all the questions of why people of the liberal persuasion and the lefty persuasion, of which I am one, have such mixed feelings, to put it mildly, about you, let's talk about you in Chicago. You just alluded to the fact that you used to live at 19th and Jefferson, but just doing some basic research about you, reading some articles in the Tribune, I learned that you were actually grew up in Chicago. Do I have that correct, that you went to high school in Chicago as well?
Yeah, I went to Our Lady of the Snows Grammar School. I went to St. Lawrence High School. And then I went to Illinois State for a few years. And then where I met Pete D'Alessandro, who we became great friends, who ran Bernie's Iowa campaign both times. And then I went to, actually got my degree at Columbia College in Chicago in marketing communications. I was going to go into advertising and, you know, be a writer, a copywriter. And I just started doing stand-up, and that was that. They started paying me right away to do stand-up. It was unbelievable. It was a great time for stand-up comedy in 1989, 1990. And it was a real boom. So yeah, I never got a job. I just went right into stand-up comedy, but I still did brickwork during the day. So I would still do what I was called a tuck pointer, and people don't know what that is. So I just tell people I was a bricklayer, but that's not what I was. I was a tuck pointer, but no one knows what that is. So it's very similar. And so I did that up until I moved to Los Angeles, which is when I was 30. It was, I think, 1995 I moved. So, yeah, I was 30, right? Yeah.
So if I do my math correctly, you were born in 1965. Yeah. And so I also read that your father was a Chicago police officer. Was that accurate?
Yeah, my grandpa was a cop. My father was a cop. My oldest brother was a cop. Yeah.
So did you kind of gravitate in that direction as a young kid? Did you, like, if you watched the Cops and Robbers show, would you be rooting for the cops? Did you want to be a cop?
I did not want to be a cop. I was not. My dad made me take the police test. It was funny. I was home for summer, and they had the test, and I didn't know about it. My dad woke me and my brother up. He's like, "You're going down to take the police test." I was like, "What?" He's like, "You're going to take the police." He's like, 7 in the morning on a Saturday. I'm like, "Dad, I'm in college. Can you wait for me to screw up first?" And so I went down and took the test because my dad made me. And my brother was in law school. He made him take the test. Anyway, so they never gave me my score, which was funny. Anyway, so I don't know if I could have been or not. Being a cop, but I didn't want to be one.
What was it like to grow up in a family where your dad was a cop? Think about the times. Now, you were 3. There was a Chicago convention where police were beating up hippies, which would be like your descendants, if you will, think about it politically. They were beating up the activists on the streets of Chicago. So you're hearing at the dinner table, I'm sure, the police version of beating up the hippies and getting tough on crime and supporting old man Mayor Daley. Were you the kind of kid that rebelled against that, or were you nodding along going, yeah, it makes sense to me?
I was really too young to remember any of that. Like, the first memory, I have one memory of the Watergate hearings being on television, but the, I don't really, my memories don't really pick up. When Mayor Daley died is why I remember that happened. I don't really remember. No, it didn't. My dad was, no, he didn't really talk about being a cop. He wasn't one of those guys. He was the guy, kind of guy who became a cop because he had kids and he needed insurance and stuff like that. So that's why he was a cop. He wasn't a short haired, he didn't take steroids. It was the opposite of that. He didn't need the excitement.
So when did you have your political awakening of sorts?
So I remember Bill Clinton. I remember realizing that, wow, he's no friend to the working man. And I kind of saw what was happening and I was like, oh, wait a minute. He's becoming a right winger. He's like, he's becoming Reagan. And then of course, when the war happened and all the establishment media and the, establishment Democrats went along with it. That was a big, that's when my, I started talking about stuff like that on stage. And then when the UCB theater opened up in Chicago, in Hollywood, they asked me if I would do a show. And so I couldn't get over how bad the coverage of war was, of the Iraq war. And I mean, everybody that I knew that was WMDs was ridiculous. And that was garbage, and that we got attacked by some terrorists. And now we're going to invade Iraq. Then, so but the news media was just horrible. So I started doing a show with video, and that led to me getting a manager that was very a good manager, Alex Murray at Brillstein. And then I got an hour special on Comedy Central. I started headlining the Improvs, touring with that show. And that led to a radio show at the Pacifica, gave me a nationwide radio show off of that. And so it really was, that's how it started. And then I, just went on to do some more specials.
So continue with my utter obsession with Chicago politics, and we'll get to the national stuff later, but continue with my obsession with Chicago politics during the 80s, that whole time during the 80s, like Council Wars, Harold Washington versus Verdoliak and Burke. You were living in Chicago. Were you following that? Did you have like a side? Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, so that was really, so I was in Lipinski's district, right? I was in the 23rd ward. And I remember when Harold Washington died, boy, that was people. I remember they were up till 3 a.m. trying to pick the next mayor. And that was really exciting. People were so, I remember when Harold Washington got elected, and in my neighborhood, people were, oh my God, the blacks are going to take over. They were, how it is in Chicago. And I lived in a really segregated neighborhood at the in the 23rd Ward. It was in Vidom Park, and they had done scattered site public housing. So then there was like a black area. Then there was a dividing line of 47th Street. And then from there on, it was white. And it was funny to see. You know what was funny to see was that everyone was really certainly scared of Harold Washington, a black guy's running our city, right? All those all the people in my neighborhood. But it was funny to see how they all came around, like, hey, our streets get plowed and the garbage gets picked up and everything seems to work all right. It was like they kind of, Harold Washington, I think, was actually a uniter. If he didn't die, I think he would have actually gone a long way to uniting people in Chicago. It was unfortunate that he died, I think.
Jimmy, did you vote for him?
I wasn't old enough to vote, I don't think.
Yeah, well, you were, but that's okay. You probably weren't about that. Yes, I just did the math. And you were 18 in 83, which was the first time he ran. So you would have been old enough then if you had a mother like mine. You're getting registered to vote right now. And you're going to go vote. And of course, you would have been.
I don't remember if I even voted. I don't know.
This is the young pre-politics Jimmy Dore. I've been thinking a lot about Harold Washington lately. We do a live show at a local bar called The Hideout, and we had Judge Evans on, and he's the head of the circuit court. I was talking about this earlier, Jimmy, and he ran for mayor in 89. There was a split in the black community. And there was a split between Evans and Sarr. I don't know if you remember any of this. You were living in Chicago. And as a result, Richard M. Daley was elected a mayor, and he held on the office for 21 years. And Chicago, in my humble opinion, you may disagree with me, has been under the control of some pretty horrific mayors ever since, who have not been looking out for the people. That's generally where I come from in Chicago politics. And I always bring it back to that split in the black community, because you're right. The reaction to Harold in 87 was not as passionate as it was in 83 when he first ran. And so people like in your neck of the woods would be saying, yeah, you know, my street's paved, but I'm still not voting for him. Do you follow what I'm saying? They voted for Daley. And this is what I don't understand. Help me out here, Jimmy, because you grew up in Chicago. Why would someone on the southwest side of Chicago who sees that his neighbor is getting a better shake under Harold Washington be so determined not to vote for him, even with the evidence in his face that things are better off with him? Go ahead.
Because people were afraid of black people moving into their into the neighborhood, and then people would flee, and then their property values, you know, that cycle that happens, white flight. And so they even started a neighborhood organization that would have their own private patrols. They would have green lights on top of their cars, and that was strictly because they were afraid of black people. I'm serious. That was the response, right? And so that's what they were afraid of. Even though they realized, hey, Harold Washington is actually a competent mayor, and you know, they kind of dropped their animosity towards him. But they still had the fear of black people moving into their neighborhood, and then they'd have to move out, and because their property value was get lowered. That was their fear. I remember people were that was really a big issue when I was a kid. I remember that. I remember my brother had a house on Laverne Avenue in Vinton Park, and my mom had some parents over, friends, over to the house, and my brother was selling his house, and they were screaming, if you sell your house to a black person, I'll follow you to the airport and kill you. And all, it was like, it was crazy the way people were. It was crazy. That was quite an environment to grow up in. So that's why I think that's the answer to that question.
Do you think that same fear is at play today, with so much of the support of white working people, or white people in general? I just pick on working class people, white people in general, for Donald Trump?
There's lots of... I interviewed a guy on my show who was a Waffle House cook from Virginia. And he said that... You know, we all know that Donald Trump is a loudmouth Yankee who should have had his ass kicked a long time ago, but he's offering us something and other people aren't. And so we have to take a chance. And that's what I think a lot of people did. They're desperate for a chance, right? And they see the establishment that has been had their boot on their neck their whole life. And there's no light at the end of the tunnel. And then a guy who comes along who poses himself as an outsider to that system, who has the power to get stuff done and is gonna stand up to them and all that. So I mean, that you can see why that would be appealing to someone like that, or appealing enough that they would take a chance. And so it's amazing though that the way when Donald Trump got elected, the Democrats, they didn't oppose any of his horribleness. In fact, they encouraged it. They increased his military budget $132 billion while he was in office. Now, you could end homelessness for $20 billion. So, by the way, that $132 billion, that's not just one year. That's every year in perpetuity. We spend an extra $132 billion on the military when we don't have an enemy. And Russia is not our, Russia has a GDP smaller than California. California. This idea that somehow Russia is pulling the strings of in the United States is the establishment's way to hide behind that. So you don't examine how people would get so desperate to vote for an obvious con man game show host with no political experience and how he could beat the most well-moneyed political machine in the history of our country. So they don't want to answer those questions. They never did an autopsy. You know, when the Republican Party lost to Barack Obama, they actually did an autopsy. And the Democrats didn't. The Democrats went Russia, 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 racism, Russia, racism. And as if Trump invented racism. You know, three out of the last five RNC chairpersons have apologized for the Southern strategy. So this isn't anything new. Everybody knows that the Republican Party used the Southern strategy, which is using dog whistles to play off racism and to get votes. Everybody knows that, right? So this idea that Donald, but that's what they want you to think. Because otherwise you'd have to get past identity politics and fear mongering, and you have to talk about economics, and that's what they don't want to do. That's why they want. That's why they're implementing identity politics. Yeah. And if people don't know what identity politics is, identity politics is when instead of giving you someone that's going to actually help you, they're going to give you somebody in power that looks like you who's going to keep screwing you. Well, so what I said, if the Democratic Party was around, if it was in 1860, the Democrats would be bragging about their first transgendered slave owner.
Yeah, no, I heard that joke. I forget where I heard you say that. But I got to tell you this. You're absolutely correct when you say that Donald Trump did not invent racism and prejudice and fear, but he sure the hell exploited it. And just the way Eddie Radoliak exploited it in 1983, when you were a young man, in Chicago. Eddie. Yeah. Fast Eddie. And, and there's always someone, and you're absolutely correct. As an old lefty, I have to say, Jimmy Dore, you are absolutely correct. When you talk about all the fear mongering, when it comes to wars and how every now and then a Democrat and a Republican, they get together and they concoct some reason to have a war, get everybody all fired up on the war so they don't look what's going on. I would say I would add the fear of other. So the Republican Party right now is exploiting the same fear of other that the Democrats in Chicago exploited in the 1980s, and that got people who would like Harold Washington, would probably, if they were just being as logical as they could, would vote for Harold Washington, but won't do it. Do you follow me, Jimmy? So you're saying
like always, since I've been alive, the Republican Party is stoking racism for votes and power.
Yes, absolutely.
So nothing new about that.
No,
there's nothing new about that. And by the way, the Bill Clinton and the Democrats did the same thing. If you've ever seen those videos of them talking about the Mexicans and how we have to build, I mean, they're all for the war. I mean, Joe Biden is still going to court, taking people's houses away to continue building the border wall, for Christ's sake. If you ever heard the rhetoric that Bill Clinton used to use against immigrants from Mexico, it was almost word for word the kind of stuff Donald Trump was saying. It is really distasteful to hear the shit that they were saying, blaming our problems on immigrants again. And so this is a bipartisan thing. So, you know, Barack Obama deported more Hispanics than all the presidents combined since 1890. That's according to Fusion's reporting. So this side, and by the way, he built those cages, right? And by the way, right now, Joe Biden has doubled the amount of people in detention facilities. And so Donald Trump actually deported way less Hispanics than Barack Obama did. So the idea that you had to vote for Hillary Clinton because of immigration is not true. That idea that, well, if you had kids in cages, well, they're still in cages. And guess who built them? So this idea that this one party, and by the way, we all know that capitalism runs on racism, right? And who owns the Democratic Party except Wall Street, the military industrial complex, big oil, and big pharma. So that we have to, I'm telling people that we have to stop voting for Democrats. We have to do it for at least one cycle. As Lawrence O'Donnell said, they don't have to listen to you. Show them that you are willing to help withhold your vote. And right now we have nobody fighting for us. And that's the real failure of the squad and the Justice Democrats, because it would be better off if they weren't in there, because they give the false impression that there is someone in there fighting for you.
But wait a minute, wait.
Right now,
how could you say they would be better off if they, I mean,
because what's needed is we need a break from these two parties. We got to stop supporting. It's what America has, one corporate pro-war, pro-Wall Street party. And in usual American extravagance, we have two of them. I mean, they work for the exact same people. Right. So that's not my joke. That's someone else's joke. But
glad you gave him credit for it. But I would say there's a significant difference. You may call it the margins between a Democrat and a Republican. I'll give you just one example. And okay. I just got this. This, for some reason, Jimmy, I'm on mailing lists from the Republican Party. I don't know why. I've never given a nickel to them, but I'm on every mailing list. And so I just continue to keep, I let them come in because I want to see what they're saying. And every day I get, I'm not kidding, like 50 emails from Republicans. And they're always pushing certain points, pushing. And so I just got one today that said, look out. Look out. The Democrats are going to bring communism to this country. Communism, Jimmy Dore. Okay. So Dennis and I would be driving home. Jimmy Dore. If only. The views and opinions of Jimmy Dore do not necessarily reflect those of the Ben Jarofsky Show. Anyway, so Dennis and I would be driving home. The producer Dennis, and we would be listening to your show, and you would be ripping the Democrats.
That's right.
You'd be ripping them. I'm like, yeah, get mad, Jimmy Dore. Now let's go punch a Republican. Come on, I want to just come on, just for the hell of it, Jimmy Dore. Just, you gotta exercise that muscle. I mean, you know, you even started ripping my beloved Bernie Sanders. I'm like, just
Bernie Sanders. The hell of what a disappointment of epic proportions, Bernie Sanders.
So wait, why don't you just occasionally, just for the hell of it, just to exercise the arm? Go. I mean, you acknowledge they're a freaking racist party. That
they're both racist parties. This idea.
So
the Republicans have.
So why not just go the Republican?
Joe Why Biden not? Is the president. Joe Biden said he didn't want his kids growing up in a racial jungle. Joe Biden passed the racist crime bill. He credits. And what did that do? That mass incarcerated black and brown people at rates that's never seen. We're the largest penal colony in America. And he still is ramping up the drug war right now. He's not reducing it. So this again. So I just come from a different perspective, and people want me to. I certainly. My show made fun of Republicans all the time. And then when the Bernie Sanders thing happened, I realized, what my role should be, because that's low hanging fruit. And of course, we exposed Donald Trump for all his, and I would expose to my audience. I'm sure you heard those shows where I go, now the people who voted for Donald Trump, now you know he's a con man. Now you know he's not doing what he said he was going to do. Now he's not standing up to the establishment. He actually is the establishment. He's passing this tax cut for billionaires, and he's not giving you anything. And he said he's going to give you health care, and he's going to make the government pay for it, and he's not doing anything. In fact, he's giving you less health care. Donald Trump is just a bigot tool of the same people he claims to be fighting. He's not. He's one of them. And I've said all that on my show. I just don't spend as much time saying that because what I think my job to do on my show is, just like Chomsky says, is you try to clean up your own house first. So I try to pull the Democratic Party to the left. So in the way I'm trying to do it now, as I'm taking Lawrence O'Donnell's advice, and I'm trying to start a third party called the People's Party with Nick Brana, who used to be Bernie Sanders' national political outreach director in 2016. So we are trying to do this thing called People's Party. And what I've said before is that we don't need to get a majority. What we need to get is start polling at 10 or 15%, which would be just as many people who voted for Bernie, probably even less. You don't even need as many. And if they would just stop voting for the Democrats for one cycle, we would get a lot of power. Now, and if we base the party on popular ideas on left and right, for instance, single payer. Turns out the majority of Trump voters are for it now. So we can do that. Ending the wars. Turns out the majority of them are for ending the wars. How about a minimum wage? It always passes. It's very popular. So how about we do student debt relief? How about we do marijuana legalization? So we can run a party on that. Just like when they started the Republican Party, it was an anti-slavery party. So we can start our party on things that everybody agrees on. And so now it's the Democrats or the Republicans can't get elected without our votes because we'll have 15%. And by the way, that gets us into the debates. So again, I'm sure they'll change the rules as soon as we qualify, like they always do. Yeah. But so that's how you pull the party to the left. And that's what Lawrence O'Donnell said in that documentary about Ralph Nader. And if you ever want to have a chance to pull the Democratic Party to the left, you have to be willing to show them that you're going to withhold your vote for them. And until you do that, they don't have to listen to you. He said it. He was the chief of staff for Monahan, the senator. And he said, believe me, I was worked in Washington. I was a Democrat. I never had to listen to anybody on my left.
You know,
so now we're trying to find a way to make them listen. So this is why. So my job is to critique them from the left, to get them just to do what they ran on. I'm just trying to get the Democrats who got elected to do what they ran on. Yeah. I'm not asking them to go, oh, I want Joe Biden to give me a public option. I want Joe Biden to give me student debt relief. I want him to give me a living wage. He ran on all that shit and he's not doing any of it.
I hear you. By the way, I loved the riff on Trump. Can I just say this, Jimmy? I love that riff. It was like a minute. You went a minute on Trump. It was really good. And then you went right back to the Dems. So what we're going to do, selective editing, when this has come out, all the only show will be that 1 minute riff on Trump. It was a fast interview with Jimmy Dore. He didn't have much else to say.
Mean, everybody knows that.
Jimmy, hold on. Every single issue. See, I part of me wants to be like you. Okay. Part of me wants to be like Jimmy Dore. I want to be rich, okay? I want to wear sunglasses. But not everybody can be Jimmy Dore. Because, well, first of all,
I make less money than AOC. So I don't know, people start to say I'm rich.
Don't bash AOC. I love AOC. No. I don't, just let's, before we get to AOC, okay? No, I love AOC.
Would you say that if you were talking about AOC? I want to be like AOC. I want to be rich. Would you say that about her?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, good.
I mean, comfortable. I don't know. There's rich and there's, I mean, you know, I'm a reader writer, Jimmy Dore. You ever heard of, you must have seen a reader when you were, I'm an old reader writer, Jimmy Dore, okay?
I'm a fucking nightclub comedian YouTuber. Everything I did, I had to bite, scratch, and claw for my whole life.
No, so. I love AOC. I love her. She came out of nowhere. She beat the old boy. And she's playing a game to a certain degree. Come on, Jimmy, you got to play the game. I mean, I get what you do. You're not in the arena, so I'm not in it either. I just have a microphone.
Ben, the co-founder of the Justice Democrats, Kyle Kulinski, has now come around and he says on his show on the regular that the AOC and the squad are an abject failure. So that's the co-founder of the Justice Democrats. And people want to make it seem like Jimmy Dore is some kind of bad guy who's mean to the poor, powerful people in Congress. It's obvious to anybody who's taking a look at what's happened.
Hold on. I allowed you to take me on a tangent. And I willingly went on the tangent, but with my love for AOC. But let me go back to where I was going.
Okay.
I obsessively follow all those issues that you talked about, healthcare, incoming inequality.
Can you hold 1 second, Ben? Ben, someone's here. Can you hold 1 second? I apologize.
Oh, my God. This has never happened. Jimmy Dore has got up. He's left.
Oh, you found it? Hang on.
And now he's
okay. I'm back. Right,
now, okay, cool.
I'm sorry.
That's all good. It was funny. It was
all of a sudden somebody showed up at my house. I'm like, hi, well, who are you?
Yeah, who are you? Why are you here? Bring him on the podcast. Maybe they'll praise AOC. All right, anyway. So I obsessively follow all those issues that you ran down on the local level. And in every single instance, Jimmy Dore, every single instance, the Republican Party is fighting the Democratic Party on those. So they're pushing.
I had Shama Sawant on my show, and she's a socialist who's elected to the city council in Seattle.
Let me just finish this thought, and then you can get to that. So,
okay.
in every single instance, it's immediate reaction. You cannot find one Republican to support you on any of those initiatives. Not only that,
I can't find a Democrat to support me on any of those initiatives.
I could find Democrats that at least support the issue. Here in Chicago, we got a bunch of them. Carlos Ramirez Rosa.
The Democrat, I'm talking on a national level, the Democratic Party is in complete control of government. And what are we getting? We're getting right-wing legislation left and right. They ramped up the military budget again.
Yes, they did. I can't argue with you, Jimmy Dore. I can't argue with that. But my point is this. The resistance.
They're not giving us health care in the middle of a pandemic. And they can do it.
I would say the resistance from the Republican Party, the labeling of every single initiative that you ran down as a radical. I just told you, I got this email. They're calling them communists.
They've been doing that since I was in grammar.
But it works. It works. You just talked about nothing. How.
Hey, you know what? There's that. Remember that song, Ben? You ain't been doing nothing if you ain't been color red. If you marched or agitated, you're bound to hear it said. So you might as well ignore it or love the words instead. Because you ain't been doing nothing if you ain't been color red.
That's a great song. And you did a marvelous rendition of it. But I'm just simply saying, and the reality is this. They call you Reds, and they build a resistance to every single one of those initiatives that you say you champion, and you can't find any support among the Republican Party. And more than that, they malign you. They call you a Red, and they get people to vote against their own interests by maligning you. So how can you possibly think that in this country, with that wall of opposition coming from the Republican Party, a third party would be the solution?
A vote for the Democratic Party is a vote against your own interests. That's for goddamn sure. If you voted for Joe Biden, you ain't getting fucking anything. And you're not even getting, you know how the rest of the world handled their COVID? When if they shut down your business, they paid your employee's salary. We didn't do that in the United States, the richest country on the face of the earth. And Joe Biden is a tool, a foot soldier of corporate America, Wall Street, the military industrial complex, and big pharma, which is why you ain't getting health care. You're not even going to get a public option. They're keeping that from you. Barack Obama said he wouldn't sign a healthcare plan unless it had that in it in 2008, and he did it anyway.
Jimmy, you can't find a Republican in the state of Illinois.
Finish, Ben, yeah, go ahead. You got to let me make my case. Barack Obama had a filibuster-proof Senate. They had the House, and he had the White House, and we got a right-wing bullshit corporate giveaway healthcare plan fucking anyway. What did he do? He kicked 5.1 million families out of their house in a similar economic situation, and he gave their houses to Wall Street after he bailed them out. And then what did he do? He took us from two wars to fucking seven. And then he dropped more bombs than George Bush. He deported more Hispanics than every president combined since 1890. And he built those fucking cages. And then he gave equity firms on their way out the door another bailout, which made it harder for first-time home buyers and renters. He did everything to screw up the working class. He did nothing for them. And black people's, the income and disparity exploded under him. And guess what happened? The stock prices of big pharma and the stock prices of health insurance went up. So voting for a Democrat is against your own interest. And I'm sorry to have to tell people that, but that's why people don't like me, because they want to believe that there's somebody in government fighting for you. And there fucking isn't. Look at what Barack Obama's doing in his goddamn library. It's bullshit. Those people don't give a fuck about you. Barack Obama lives on a 30-acre estate on Martha's Vineyard worth fucking $15 million. And you're going to tell me he gives a shit about anybody? He doesn't. Again, they dropped so many bombs that they ran out of bombs. That's the tool he is. He's the only guy I know who had a fucking peace prize and a kill list, which killed 90% innocent people. So this idea that Putin's a thug and our presidents aren't is, again, propaganda. You've been propagandized. Everybody's been propagandized. And that's why my show catches such flack, because we're over the fucking target and we're letting people know that your politicians are fighting against you and not for you.
All right. Well, I definitely let you make your case. That was a hell of a riff. That was another one. What'd you say?
I said I super appreciate. I knew that.
Yeah, I let you. You go, let me make my case. I go, all right, Jimmy Dore, go.
Most people would. And I appreciate it.
And the old lefty in me, I agree with, like, it's just like being in that car. Listen, and me and Dennis driving in the car, listening to you go on one of your little rants. And I'm like, you know, the guy makes a good point. But you don't have to say all that nasty shit about AOC. Come on now.
The problem isn't that.
Come on. I love AOC. And you know what? When you go on the Tucker Carlson show, I want to hear that Trump riff, because old boy Tucker's just using you. You think he likes you, Jimmy Dore? He's like, I'm going to bring this lefty on my show and get this lefty talking all shit about Democrats, and then I'll be that little smile of his, like.
So I'm like,
come on, I want you to go, because it's live, isn't it? Is live?
Yeah. Well, when you go on his live show, yeah.
So it's live. You could say whatever you want. You could go on that Republican rant. You could go, look, Tucker Carlson, right now, I'm telling you, right now, your boy Donald Trump, he's just manipulating the hell out of all these working class people. If you vote for Donald Trump, you're voting against your own interests. You want to get health care, you're not going to get it with Donald Trump. You want to get fair taxes, not going to get it with Donald Trump. You want to get an end to inequity in this country, not going to get it with Donald Trump. I want you to do that the next time. I respect you come on a lefty show and rip Democrats. I want to hear you when you have that power, that access. When you go on a right-wing show, I want to hear you rip Republicans. Go ahead.
Take away, Jimmy Dore. Again, it's about a four. I go on when I go on a major platform like that, I'm thinking about how can I forward my agenda. Again, my agenda. So my agenda when I went on Tucker Carlson was to convince half the country and him that Julian Assange was not a terrorist or a cyber hacker or a criminal, that he was actually a journalist who was and now he's being prosecuted for doing actual journalism and exposing war crimes. And so Tucker Carlson at the even said at the end of that segment, he said, you know, you convinced me about Julian Assange based on the strength of your argument. Now, that used to be the gold standard for lefties when I grew up, is that if you could convince right wingers to come out, that's the whole thing. You want to use the power of our arguments that our policies are better. And I was able to do that. And so the reason why Tucker Carlson would bring me on was because we shared a common interest about anti-war rhetoric, right? And I could never understand, and I still don't understand, why he's allowed to tell the truth about Syria. So he was the only one doing it in mainstream news media. And what I tell people, when you see me on Tucker Carlson, you should get angry. Not that I'm on Tucker Carlson's bringing a progressive lefty message to half the country. You should be upset that nobody else lets me come on their show to bring that progressive anti-war message to their. I would love to go on Rachel Maddow, Chris Hayes, fake tough guy Lawrence O'Donnell, Chris Cuomo, Anderson Cooper, Wolf Blitzer, Zionist Wolf Blitzer. I would love to go on all their shows. They don't invite me. Why? Because I'm anti-war and I critique both parties because they're both corporately owned, and that's what they can't have. And so that's why they smear people like me, because I am independent media. And that's why they want you to make people afraid of people like me, that I'm some kind of an enemy of the left. I am the left and they're the corporate left. And that's why they're trying to smear people like me.
All right, look, just next time you go on Tucker Carlson, do me a favor. You went on that filibuster there. Just do what I said. Just you, part of the message that you want 50% of the people to hear is what a fraud Donald Trump is.
I've written.
Now, I give you credit for this. I will give you credit.
I went on Donald Trump and criticized him. I went on Tucker Carlson. I criticized him for going after Iran and Venezuela. So whenever it comes up, and I do it. This idea that I don't do that is ridiculous.
All right. Well, I want to see you do it some more. And by the way, his quote unquote being convinced about Assange, that you know as well as I do, Jimmy Dore, that's all tactical. Because they hated on Assange back in the day. And Republicans have done a switch. And they think it's in their tactical advantage to be supportive of him. If he started releasing information that made Donald Trump look bad, man, Tucker Carlson would be the first one. We need investigations. How did he get this information? Who leaked it to him? Is it the deep state? Remember that? Whenever you have some dirt on Donald Trump, they always want to know who was the one who leaked it. Where'd they get that information? We need an investigation. And then when they flip it, and when they got some dirt on Hillary Clinton, it's like, hey, man, don't you believe in free speech and investigative journalism? Man, these guys are the biggest frauds, Jimmy. It's just like cancel culture. Don't get me started on cancel culture. They're always whining and crying that when you say you're not allowed to insult like a black person or a woman anymore, oh man, they're taking away my rights. But now it comes to teaching slavery. They're trying to impose laws in this country. You can't even teach slavery. Jimmy Dore, if you try to go into a classroom in Tennessee right now and talk about how the Republican Party was the party against slavery, which is something you said about 15 minutes ago, they say, get out of this class, young man. You're making the little white kids feel bad. And that you can't let little white kids feel bad. That's playing the victim card. So you see what I'm saying, Jimmy?
What I'm saying is, if you want to help black and brown people in America, nothing would help them more than a living wage, health, Medicare for all, and student debt relief. And all right. So you want to talk about some fucking thing that's happening in Tennessee that I could give a shit about. I know what I give a shit about? I give a shit about that's going to make a material difference in people's fucking lives, which is a $15 living wage, Medicare for all, student debt relief, free college, and ending the fucking wars. That's going to help black and brown people any more than this fucking bullshit worrying about. I don't spend any time worrying about that stuff.
Well, you see, but it's part of the fight that they have against the things that you want. That, like, trying to get white people against black people and try to convince white people that black people are the enemy and that they've manufactured this case against white people is what is a force, a factor, a major force and factor against the implementation of all those things that you say you want. So it's like, if you ignore that fight, you're ignoring the larger fight as well.
That's incorrect. You pretend like just the Republicans are the ones stopping those things. It's the Democrats. Joe Biden can right now give you Medicare for all with the stroke of a pen. He could give you student debt relief with the stroke of a pen. He could make marijuana legal. He could do all these.
I agree with you on the marijuana thing.
You just have this pretend that only the Republican Party is against workers. It's not. It's the Democratic Party, too. It's one party rule. So that's why you get caught up in this and you waste a lot of in my opinion, that's a waste of energy because you're pretending there's two parties in America and there isn't.
All right. You know what? I got a feeling we're going to have to talk a lot longer for me to convince you that I'm right and or the other way around. All right.
Okay. I appreciate it, Ben. I really appreciate you bringing me on and letting me get my message out about our shows at Thalia Hall. Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
All right, Jimmy Dore. Why don't
and
you,
we
one more.
We agree on goals. We have the same goals. You and I have the same goals.
Yeah, I'm a lefty, Jimmy. I got about 10 years on you. Okay, you got a while to catch up with me.
Oh, really? Okay.
But I'm a lefty, and we would disagree immensely. Maybe we'll do a whole show debating the mayor. I think AOC is just.
Why do you think Kyle Kulinski says she's an abject failure?
Know. I don't know. I actually do not. I did not know that when you said that. So, you know, I didn't comment. You notice I didn't say anything about it. I mean, yeah. I'm kind of like a guy. If I don't know something, I don't really comment about it because I never heard him say that. So I'll have to do the research on that one and get back to you. All right. Jimmy Dore, one more time. Tell folks where you be this Saturday. And so I do a Leonard Goodman. This is for you. Go ahead, Jimmy.
We're in Chicago at Thalia Hall. We're doing two shows. We just added a second show. So go to ThaliaHall.com or go to JimmyDoreComedy.com for tickets. It's spelled Jimmy Dore, D-O-R-E. Thank you very much, Ben. I appreciate you taking time.
Very good. That's Jimmy Dore. Thank you very much, Jimmy Dore. And I also want to thank Dr. D, the man, the myth, the legend, the pride and joy of Alton, Illinois, without whom this show would be possible. As Jimmy Dore will tell you back home and Alton, they call him the peach picker. I forgot what they called him. Take care, everybody. See you tomorrow.
They call me Dennis.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.